best coach who specializes in male to female, also masculine and feminine communication for romance, love, and understanding, a greater understanding of ourselves through relationship. So we're going to get started very quickly, but first we're going to go right into a song.
When thinking of male to female relationships in an intro song, I got to go with the classic, Paula Abdul, Opposites Attract.
First Century. So we're actually going to get that song here shortly. Love in the 21st Century is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR members and by the bankruptcy law offices of Michael O. Hayes, a proud supporter of community radio. Michael Hayes offers free consultations and payment plans for Chapter 7 and 13 bankruptcies and has been serving Northern California residents for more than 30 years. The telephone number for Michael Hayes, spelled H-A-Y-S, is 892-8916 or at mhayeslaw.com. That's mhayeslaw.com. And if you're wanting to join the conversation with Julian and I about the show, give us a call here at 895-1114. It is a call-in show, so we'd love to hear from those that are listening about some of the highlights that you've experienced on the show. What is it that you like to hear us talking about? What are topics that speak to your heart and that you can relate to? Give us a call. Join the conversation. You can also join us on the Facebook page, which is Love in the 21st Century on Facebook. And you can also find more information about the show and other shows on KZFR.org. There's often the shows backlogged for the last couple weeks, as I understand it. So if you ever miss a show and want to be able to check out what's going on, feel free to go to KZFR.org and check it out.
On the rap, so mic it. Here's a little story, and you're sure to like it. Swift and sly, and I'm playing it cool with my homegirl, Paula.
Baby, since we never, ever agree, you like the movies, and I like TV.
I take them serious, and you take them light.
I go to bed early,
and I party all night.
Our friends are saying,
we ain't gonna last,
cause I'm
So Opposites Attract, that was a song that was inspired by a show that we had done in the past. Whenever I think of the past, I think of a show called that we did with Love and Mike Colleen. Do you remember that show, Julian?
Love and Mike Colleen. Am I bad if I say nope?
No, it's totally cool. I think why it comes to mind is we've talked about it recently.
Oh, now I do know.
So it was a show where it was a guy who is a empowerment coach that works mostly with men came on, and he was talking about his program that he worked with in order for men to have more success in the dating realm.
Agreed.
Yes.
And that's the polite way of saying it.
Yeah. So I actually was just starting to play some of that episode. Shall I start? Shall I continue?
I don't know. I mean, we could. We could also, you know, go forward with what, you know, we had scheduled for the day and, you know, announce to people what is special about this particular show, et cetera, et cetera.
Oh, yeah. Well, I did announce that. But, yeah.
Oh, jeez.
While you were making your way up to the studio, I was announcing that tonight was your last official night as host of Love in the 21st Century.
That's right. I've been fired because I'm late. I'm kidding.
Consecutively. We're serious about attendance around here.
Yes, my last show after 2 years.
Yeah. So,
yep. And
it's a good run.
It is a good run. I think.
High five.
High five. We're high-fiving. I think it is a longer run than expected.
I never thought about it. I'm surprised it's been 2 years.
Though we've been friends a decade, I think we've talked more in the past 2 years than the previous eight put together, simply because of the show.
Yeah, I was like, the only other time that might have competed with us when we worked in the same facility.
You make it sound so like, so X-Files. It was a facility deep underground.
Yes, yes. It was like covert operations. It's researching the rest of the planet through their food.
Yes. We met in a sports bar kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
As employees. And it's interesting. I'm now talking to that sports bar about bringing live music there once a week.
Great.
That very same one. So that's fun.
Yeah, it is. So this is, you know, let's talk about some of the highlights then of the show. I mean, like, originally the show started, I feel like we've had this conversation a few times on the air now, started a couple years ago as just an idea. Just a concept. I mean, for me, it started, you know, much longer ago than that. And it's been a good couple of years. But when you think of the past, like, highlights that come to mind, what have been your moments?
My moments.
Or your shows?
Well, you know, there's a spectrum. There's, you know, if we go, this is, Julian, this is your life on Love in the 21st Century, where we kind of relive the highlights, like a series finale. Or season finale, anyway. You know, there's pluses and negatives. I remember once you weren't able to be here, but we had Sue Hildebrandt run the board for us, and that was really cool. And she's great. And then my guest, Michelle Remain Nameless, completely froze on air. And Sue and I ended up talking most of the half hour, and our guest just complete. And she, you know, was very apologetic, but she got very nervous. And totally froze. And I think when I think back on like the biggest oh snap moment, that would probably be it.
What were you supposed to be talking about?
Well, I won't say who we were talking to because I don't want to embarrass her. It's natural. I mean, it's easy.
Oh,
to
yeah, no, I mean,
and stuff on a mic, but
you can't underestimate how nervous it can be to be on the air. And I guess for myself on that kind of topic, I just never think about it. That's like the mm-hmm. You look at who you're talking to. And other than that, you look at the board every once in a while to make sure that the sound's going out. But you don't think about the people that are listening to you.
Yeah.
Like
thousands in their cars,
maybe.
At home. No, definitely. I mean, my understanding, as I've said before, is that the KZFR average listenership is about 10,000 people at a time.
Right.
So at least I think that's what they tell their sponsors. So.
Right.
or supporters, rather. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of a... You know, what are we going to do moment? And Sue, if you're listening, thanks. I'm sure you remember.
Sue, you're amazing. We love you.
You're the best bee in town. And as far as like fun times, we have had lots of laughter.
Laughter's good.
Lots of laughter in here. And a few weeks ago, we were talking about polyamory, which it's surprising it took us a few years to get to that. And
it took us a while to get people that were willing once again to come on the air. Like, it's not always just about mm-hmm. being nervous, like getting shy about what's actually you're saying on the air, but like being identified on mm-hmm. the air. So mm-hmm. you know, some people, it took a couple years before they even were even willing, you know, like Josiah mentioned when she came on, that I'd asked her for 2 years before mm-hmm. she actually agreed to coming on the show for her, you know, for her own reasons. And it's
yeah.
You know, that happens in terms of like living in a small area, not wanting to be identified mm-hmm. in certain ways.
Yeah, and other people have expressed when invited, so wait, am I coming on as a representative of this topic, or am right. I coming on as me and my personal experience? And, you know, my response to that has always been both.
Yeah, what do you want?
Can you be both? Can you be you and your, you know, chosen
yeah.
Topic? You know,
can you say this part represents like the organization and this is my personal mm-hmm. opinion? But, you know, when working in particular organizations, sometimes you have to be a little more careful about mm-hmm. what you're saying, because, you know, you never know who's listening.
Right. And some people take stuff kind of personal. But let's see. I think it's great. I'm not surprised. I mean, I guess I am surprised it's lasted this long. Maybe the show. But I find it interesting that, to my knowledge, this is the first show KZFR has had on love as a
ever?
Concept. I mean, I've been listening to KZFR a dozen years, and I've not ever heard... I mean, you could say stuff like Eco Talk and,
right.
and things like that are love in a certain sense.
Right.
But in a love, in an intentional sense, I think I have to applaud you, Tammy.
That's me applauding myself.
For, you know, initiating the show in the first place and doing, you know, 90% of the legwork to get it done. And then just saying, hey, want to ride? And I'm like, sure, I'll jump in. And here I am.
And here you are. And we've had a busload of people on the way.
Busload of people.
Yeah, a couple buses. It's been awesome. It's been wonderful to see the amount of people that are willing to get behind it. I think at first it's kind of like, oh, like you have a show talking about love, like, there's the initial reaction of like, oh, you just, you know, relationship talk. And then as it gets deeper, a deeper conversation, people are like, oh, wow, that is pretty like a radical concept to be talking about love like that mm-hmm. on the air. So it's definitely been a fun 2 years. And like you said, like, and I say it with general loving surprise. 2 years has passed. That is like shocking in mm-hmm. my mind. Like, mm-hmm. wow. 2 years.
Of initially every other week for a half hour.
Right.
And every week for a half hour, I think. And then we went to an hour.
Yeah.
Something like that. Anyway, yeah. Pretty regular. Another show that comes to mind that I don't think you actually got to hear. Again, it's another one where you weren't here.
I think there's a theme here.
I don't know. But I think it was the first one that you weren't going to be able to be here for since when we partnered on the show. And Mark ran the board,
mm-hmm.
and I invited Chuck Epperson on the show. And
this was the men show.
It was the man show.
Yes, I remember hearing about it, but I was away.
Yeah, I mean, I saw an opportunity. You know, the first time that you weren't here to do a show about love and men mm-hmm. and like man love and how do you like be a good father and be a good son and be a good brother and things like that. And it got really deep.
What were the keynotes from that?
Well, the guest was Chuck Epperson, and for those who do not know who he is, he's a local music legend. He's been playing music in town about 30 years, and he also owns and operates Epperson Brothers Kempo Karate on Mangrove there. And you know, I asked him to be on because he has a very successful 30-year marriage. He's been an entrepreneur most of his life. He's got a son who's in his mid-20s, who was a surprise to both of them. You know, Chuck tells the story of him coming home, you know, been married a decade to his wife, and she's bawling on the couch. And he says, Nanette, what's wrong? And she says, I'm pregnant. It ruins everything. And he said, what are you talking about? It makes everything so much better. And so, you know, having him on the show and, you know, being... I don't know, third degree black belt, having trained 30 some people to be black belt, there's a certain kind of sensei loving energy that comes from Chuck, and it was great to have him on. And Mark, though he was just running the board, definitely engaged in the conversation as well, because it was kind of provocative in a way, I suppose. Anyway,
yeah, that seems like it would have been a fun show and a good topic to revisit at some point, because that was actually something that I was recently thinking about. It's just like the role that we each play in life and how that shows up for us individually. And some of my favorite shows being where people are just talking about their mm-hmm. own story, their own experience, and just being able to have like a little peek into their life. And some of these, you know, some really amazing people in our community that are doing really great work, like Stephen and Susan Shooting, that do a show right after us.
Yes.
And being able to just like, you know, hear the in and outs of their day to day, which, you know, it's just some of my favorite shows. I was talking with them and looking at this SoundCloud here. I was looking at some of the past shows that are actually still on there, and there's a show called Across the Decades where Sasha Rose and William Wildheart came on, and they talked about their separate relationships, not relationships with each other, but separate relationships with people that were in, you know, generationally different age groups than them. And just how, you know, that surprisingly mm-hmm. deep element that came, and it just got so real in here. And
It got so real.
And it felt so good, because it's like, this is what makes good radio. It's just like these really captivating stories where people are just really sharing like their hearts and their experiences. And, you know, I feel like that's what a lot of people can identify with. It's fun to be able to do some promotion for different organizations that don't get that. That don't get the spotlight from too often, that are doing loving things for our community. But those shows that really show you the other side of people's lives that we don't get to see, it's always been a really good joy for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I feel as though we've developed a listenership. You know, you could call in.
Are you listening?
To tell us you're listening. But throughout my work week, you know, I will run into people that loved your show last week. You know. And you know, though Emily and I have been outed on this show in the past as having, now we're in a relationship, she and I, and we've talked about it briefly in the past. And I suppose since it's the last show I'm going to be on, I can talk about it more than briefly.
Yes.
But I've had the experience of somebody say that they've been listening to our show since the beginning, and that they have heard mine and Emily's relationship develop.
That's
as a result.
Wonderful.
I think that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, what was it? Did they have any further comments upon that?
No, just, you know. Just
they could hear it in your voices?
Yeah, you know, I mean.
Yeah, that's amazing. Good ear.
Yeah, you know, for those keeping track, the third host of the show is Emily Rose, mm-hmm. and she was one of our very first guests on the show, and a year later came back and guested again, and then she got involved with me with the Chico Breaks the Record Guinness attempt at the Tackle Box. I started putting together. She very quickly became co-director and of that project. And, you know, yeah. So, I mean, it's more than safe to say that this show brought she and I together, too. So.
I think I get some matchmaking points in there.
You do.
this show builds love. It brings love to people's lives. And I just want to, like, there's just, like, this hilarious, you know, memory that comes to mind of a conversation that we had, Julian, about relationships. And it was, like, before you and Emily had met, Emily Rose had met, and we had done, like, some series or talked about just like online dating and different stuff like that, and our different perspectives on, you know, the male. And I'm not saying by any means that you haven't like put your effort in. I'm sure I know that you have in terms of like sustaining and creating your relationship with Emily, but just like how women tend to be like, oh, you said to be in the right place at the right time, and then it's just gonna magically happen. And I was like, well, Julian, you kind of were in the right place at the right time, mm-hmm. doing what you loved, mm-hmm. which is all like what we talk about. And hey, you got a pretty stellar relationship out of it.
Yeah, you know, I think so. I would say that a few years back, actually, it's an auspicious day for this discussion. A few years back, 4 years ago, five maybe, I made the conscious decision to be myself – but loudly.
You
know,
good
as a
decision.
Single man, I was like, I'm 36 now, so I was just over 30 then.
You're 36?
I am.
Whoa.
I know. 18 twice. And
watch out.
Yeah. But I made this conscious decision to be myself loudly. And that's when I lived downtown at the time, and I still do, but lived at this one place where I tore up the front yard and put in a vegetable garden.
I remember that.
And then I put earth walls in front of the, Cobb Natural Building, something I'm really passionate about. So I built Cobb walls in the front yard and just started being me loudly. Started ECC, did the I Play in Chico documentary, started the Guinness attempt. And I feel like, like you were just saying, being in the right place at the right time. For Emily and I to meet and, share space. It was years of effort to get in the right place at the right time. It wasn't like a random Tuesday. I was getting a sandwich and we just knocked her books out of her hand and let me get a coffee for you. And then there we go. It was, I had to be doing all the things, years worth of being myself loudly, to put myself in a position where I could meet somebody doing the same.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that being in the right place at the right time, saying that, like, it depends on what it is that you want. So, both of you are really, like, stellar beings. Mm-hmm. So what you're doing, in order to find somebody that's at that caliber, you have to be doing it yourself, mm-hmm. Like what you're saying. And I'm happy about how you pointed out that, it was a journey that took 4 years or however long. I mean, really, it's a lifetime of work to really get yourself out there knowing that you're living your personal truth. Like, what is it that you want to do? And doing it because that's what your heart tells you to do, not because anybody per se is going to give you an award at the end of the day. But by the way, if you want to give us an award, we'll totally accept it.
Put it up on the wall in the studio.
Yeah, or I'll just carry it around with me, Show it to passerbys, put it on my bike, frame it.
As a final note to the story about being myself and a person being themselves loudly, today I come home and I live now next door to the place where I've been living next door for 3 years to the place that I built that vegetable garden and those earth walls, and I got to see them every single day. Well, that house was sold, and new contractors, redoing the whole thing, fixing it all up. And today, and I knew it was coming, today they bulldozed the walls.
Oh!
And they bulldozed my vegetable garden boxes, and it's all gone.
What a sign. What a sign of impermanence.
Exactly. And I went out and took pictures of it, of the bare landscape, and as it was bare before I moved into that place. And, the people out front working, they just kind of laughed. And they're like, "Do you miss them?" Like, honestly, I don't. Because, kind of like those monks that make those pretty chalk, elaborate mandalas. Mm-hmm. And then they scoop up the sand and take it to a river and put it in the river. It's the same deal. Like, those walls, there was a time capsule inside one of them where, as we finished that one day, everybody put a little note inside a wine bottle we all drank. And
Did you get that wine bottle?
I didn't. I'm sure they just bulldozed the crap out of it. But the thing is, those walls brought a neighborhood together. While I was building them, all the neighbors met each other. Those walls, led to me doing other natural building projects on a personal level. They were always a conversation piece. And they're gone now, but they most certainly served their purpose, at least in my life. So, like I said, an auspicious day.
Indeed. And then today is your last official show on the air.
And we've got a phone call coming in?
It looks like it. I'm going to try to answer that.
Okay. And I'm going to keep talking. I don't know what Tammy said just before I got here in studio. I had an appointment, but... in regards to this being my last show, it's not my last show on KZFR. I'm still finishing up my programming process, and Brad Peterson on Studio 416 on Saturday afternoons, 1:33, has asked me to be one of his alternates periodically. And in truth, that's a part of the move from this show to that show. In the past few years, you know, this was has been a lot of fun and really enlightening and amazing for my life personally. And the past few years, the music end of my life has gotten much more developed. And I've kept very busy in my evenings, booking bands and, you know, pursuing next projects and trying to figure out ways to get the community together under the music banner a little bit more, and up to and including developing a local music nonprofit. And so Brad's offer to be a part of his show timed well for me and my wife to kind of jump over there and help him out with that, which, interestingly enough, years ago when I began the programmer's process here at KZFR, it was to start a local music show. So, Brad Peterson, if you're listening, I am now on your team, and can't wait to be a part of that. So, we had a phone call, right?
We do, and they're on their way to calling the line that we will get on the air, so we'll be doing that here briefly.
Okay.
And, yeah, so you're going to be able to be... when is that show on that you're...
Studio 416 is, I believe, 1:30 to 3, and on
in the
Saturdays.
Afternoon, mm-hmm. And on Saturday.
Yep, and Dan Carter is also an alternate for that show, and Dan Carter is an amazing person. Brad and Dan both do a lot for the community of musicians and creatives. And they do it with a big heart. So, stoked to be involved with what they're doing.
So, what sort of element will you be bringing to the show, do you think?
Talking about crazy ideas and you know, and getting people to collaborate more. I know from personal experience that if you put your focus on the community around you, rather than necessarily your own needs, your needs will get met. So, you know, I've put a lot of pro bono free time into different musical projects over the past few years, but, you know, I'm in a position now where I can just do more because of what I've done in the past, so.
All right, so we got a caller. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
You want to go ahead and introduce yourself for our audience and let us know where you're calling from?
Oh, sure. My name is Maximus Pepperkamp. I'm an associate faculty in psychology at Duke College. And I like singing, and I like talking. And and I thought I'd take your call because I thought it would be pertinent to this program to introduce also some of my ideas into this program. And I once had a radio show at KCFR also.
Oh, yeah? What was your radio show?
That was when I was in my undergraduate program at Chico State.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was called The Science of Human Interaction or something like that.
Hey, that sounds like a good show. The Science of Human Interaction.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And
yes.
That was the old studio then, down the hall?
Yes, correct. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And... now in the meantime, I have sort of progressed, and I've become a teacher at Duke College, and I've given a lot of seminars and talked with a lot of people about this, and I have also sort of found my theoretical background in behaviorism, because I consider there is a big need for us to understand that, you know, behaviorism is very much directed to how behavior is actually determined by the environment that we're in.
Mm.
And so we are each other's environment when we speak. And that's kind of really where my interest in interaction is, how we influence each other while we talk.
Mm-hmm.
So I do it every day when I teach my students in class, and every time I talk with somebody. So and when we have good interaction, and I hear you guys are having that, then that's what I call sound verbal behavior. So that's when are you still there?
Yeah, we're still there. Sound what behavior?
I call that sound verbal behavior when we take turns. Yeah.
Yeah.
So when the speaker becomes the listener, and the listener can become the speaker,
mm-hmm.
and that bidirectional interaction where we take turns, and where also the speaker who speaks is himself or herself also the listener. So you are simultaneously speaking and listening, basically.
Right.
And then, as a consequence of that, your speaking and listening behavior begins to connect and become joined. And that is where real good interaction occurs.
So the point would be to have like an engaging conversation where that people are both, like what you said, listening and responding, listening and speaking during the conversation and not just sort of mindlessly agreeing, yes, to what's being said, but actually kind of questioning what's being talked about.
Correct.
You have to be careful in conversations. You don't want to just smile and nod. You never know what you're going to agree to.
No, this has nothing to do with that.
Yes. When I smile and nod, I'm generally not actually listening.
Ooh. Yes. I just disconnecting, yes.
Yeah, uh-huh. I just outed myself for all the conversations where I'm just sort of like, like in my mind, I'm sort of totally somewhere else.
I feel like is like international for I'm not listening to what you're saying.
So what you guys are actually discussing is very, very important and incredibly important for us to make progress in this world, you know, for the world to move forward and to address and solve problems. Because what you are describing here, really, and I have never spoken with you, to my knowledge, you totally understand the difference between what I would call sound verbal behavior and noxious verbal behavior. And noxious verbal behavior, then, is the kind of interaction, or that which proclaims to be interaction, but which is not really interaction because it is a one-way street.
Mm.
And so you're not really connecting because there's no turn-taking. And so the roles of the speaker and the listener are already defined and predetermined, and there's a hierarchical difference very often. And I call it noxious verbal behavior because the sound of the speaker induces negative affect in the
Like it's obnoxious?
Yeah, no, I call it noxious as an aversive stimulus.
Yes.
So the sound of the voice becomes an aversive stimulus, due to which the listener actually, disconnects.
Shuts off.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And even though people are, of course, conditioned by this and accept this as normal, because it is very widespread, this noxious verbal behavior, it is deeply problematic. And so... Unless we distinguish between sound verbal behavior and noxious verbal behavior, we do not really know the difference. And I think we have not really made that distinction very often. And because of that, we again and again are ourselves also again falling into noxious verbal behavior because that is what we have been conditioned by and that's what we have been hearing most of the time. I mean, I forget your name, but the what's your name?
Tammy and Julian.
Yep.
William. He was just saying that he's now in his 30s or something, and that he finally decided to just be himself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can really relate to that. You know, where you finally say, "Well, you know, I gotta just follow my own path or be myself,"
I'd like to say it wasn't just being yourself because it's being yourself loudly. To the point where you're like out there socially, you're not being, you know. Where you're really kind of pushing the envelope for yourself, where you're being an activist in a way.
Well, I'm still having a little bit of reservation with that, but I think I understand what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. You know, you can be yourself.
Yeah.
Right, just
exactly.
Being a role model by being yourself is just like doing what you want to do and making it, you know, sort of like a public thing, like inviting people to participate. Like what Julian was saying that he was, you know, has started was, you know, some of these musical movements that he started in Chico. And, you know, had he had not decided to be himself loudly, those things may have never come to pass. But think about how many people were inspired by his actions, by him just doing it and being himself. Just like you being inspired to call in the show today. It's like just us, you know, living and being in our own truths of who we are has led us to be on this show. Nothing more than that. I mean, God knows there's nothing else.
I have a quote on my fridge that I won't say who said it because that would the listeners here would be like, well, that doesn't matter then. But whoever said it, they said, she said, it's not a matter of who's going to let me. It's a question of who's going to stop me.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Okay.
You're not going to tell us?
I still have this because I know what I know, and I still have a little bit of questions about those statements that you're making there. But don't take me the wrong way, or so you know. It's just that I think that that when we have what I call sound verbal behavior, it is not about being loud or so. It is really about whether or not we have this kind of dialogue or not.
Absolutely.
And so in the moment we get loud or we raise our voice, and that often very often occurs when we become argumentative or when we have discussions and so forth, and then our voice basically becomes a noxious stimulus. And that is where non-verbally we are inducing negative emotions in each other. And so I'm very cautious with that because it can happen very quickly, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm glad that what you're sharing, because I like that we get to toot the horn that you're saying, that, you know, being able to demonstrate the ability to have a conversation where both, you know, where both people or multiple people, really, in our case, because we've had several different guests on the show at the same time, have an opportunity to be the listener and to be the speaker and to really feel heard, because really the point of, you know, part of the goals of the show is for people to just hear what's going on in the world, not necessarily for us to be, to have the right answer or to have the authoritative answer, as you put it, with the noxious communication, but to be able to have that conversation, to hear each other, and how just that alone is being able to change people's lives, which then changes communities, which then, you know, just changes larger areas that we live in, because we're actually hearing each other instead of deciding that we know what is right and best for each other.
Right. Okay. Well, yeah. It goes along with my way of thinking, but it is not entirely matching yet. But it's very much in the same direction, and I think it is very good that you're doing this work. So. I just thought I'd give you a call and talk a little bit with you. You know, I think that when you would know more about the distinction between sound verbal behavior and noxious verbal behavior, you would probably agree with me that that there is such a thing as you know, I'm not trying to tell you that I don't know that you're wrong or anything like that, but we can actually have that kind of conversation in which. In which you feel there is no tension, and I still feel that there is some of that. I still feel sort of like that tension, and
Tension over here. We agree with you over here. We get where you're going. I think that maybe our examples are a little bit different than maybe what you're sharing. But we agree with you that is the basis of good communication.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious if maybe before you get off the line, if maybe you have any tips for our listeners of how to change a conversation from kind of like a. Noxious behavior.
Sorry that I did not mention that. But yeah, there is definitely something that we can do. And so the key of what I call sound verbal behavior is that we listen to ourselves while we speak. So every person has a sound, and when you tune into your own sound, you can feel that your sound is your well-being or not.
Mm-hmm.
And you can sense for yourself whether you're totally at ease with what you're saying or not.
Right.
And once that moment arrives, you feel a wonderful sense of well-being. And you described it, actually, a couple of times when I listened to you. You described it very accurately. And so you have had these experiences. But now, in sound verbal behavior, you are going to more deliberately and more skillfully and more consistently you're going to have these experiences if you listen to yourself while you speak, and yeah, it's just a matter of staying attuned with yourself, and then we can become attuned with each other because everybody is attuned with themselves.
Mm-hmm. Mm. As far as listening to the things we say, we have the fortunate aspect of our show that we can go home and re-listen to everything we just said in the previous hour on SoundCloud or on KZFR and .org. Okay. And then to go back and go, oh, I see. Maybe I should have talked about this instead, or, you know, whatever. I find recording conversation is really good for looking back over it
and realizing what you're actually saying.
I want to interrupt you, because it is really not listening to a recording that will teach you this. It is really listening while you speak.
So speaking slowly.
Yes.
Okay.
And so in the moment that you speak, you're simultaneously the listener.
Yes.
I also think it's true that a lot of people don't know how they sound until they actually hear a recording.
No, you're totally correct about that. And once they begin to listen to themselves while they speak, then they begin to realize, like, oh, my God, I can really do this, and this is me. And then all of a sudden, for the first time, they realize that they are simultaneously the listener and the speaker, and there's no separation, and they are one with themselves. Hmm. So it is a very conscious act to speak and listen simultaneously.
It's great. Just listening to you right now is bringing up, like, experiences that I've had in the last week where it's like tensions have been high, and as I'm listening to the words come out of my mouth and the tone of my voice as I'm saying that, I'm like, oh my God, Tammy.
Your voice is because of the anxiety and the fear and the stress,
Right. So that slowing down that consciousness and bringing that awareness to it can really change your ability to communicate. Thank you so much for calling. How can people find out more information about you if they were wanting to?
I teach a couple of classes at Butte College, and so I look forward to seeing you in the next semester. And I have a YouTube video if you want to see that. You can go to YouTube and you can click on Sound Verbal Behavior, and then you can hear me explain it a little bit more.
Great.
And you can always call me or talk with me about it. And I consider this something that everybody ought to know about. So I feel very strongly that we can make a big difference in the world if more people know about this.
What's your YouTube channel?
YouTube is. I do not have a website or anything like that. But somebody made a couple of videos of me.
Mm-hmm.
So it's called Sound Verbal Behavior. So when you are on YouTube, you type in Sound Verbal Behavior, and then you see my videos. There's 4 videos.
Okay, great.
Yep.
Thank you so much. Have a beautiful evening.
What was your name?
My name is Tammy.
Okay, Tammy. Nice talking with you. And the guy last name was it?
Julian.
Julian.
This is last
Julian
show. Yes.
You're doing a great job there on that show, and I hear you making a really positive impact on people. So it's really wonderful.
You.
Thanks.
And we hope to have you in the studio sometime.
Oh, that would be wonderful. I'd be very excited to do that.
Great.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks for calling.
Okay. Bye, Julian.
Bye.
Bye, Tammy. Bye.
Right.
Awesome. So we have good communication, Julian.
We do.
It's only taken us 12 years to get there.
And a few arguments along the way.
Yeah, you know, I've had this recent realization. it's, you know, I say recent realization. Who knows if it was recent or not. But, you know, arguing and disagreeing is, you know, part of life.
Yeah.
Huh? It's just bound to happen. I mean, in a sense, it'd be kind of boring if you agreed with everything. It's just like,
I agree.
But it's how you argue, mm-hmm. and like, you know, how you work through those arguments and, you know, the love behind it. Like sometimes, you know, what Max was just saying, what about, you know, really listening to yourself and, you know, being able to put yourself in that other person's position of like, wow, they're listening to me right now. Mm-hmm. But if we're so stuck in the fact of being right, mm-hmm. that we're not even like really looking at like how we might be wrong, mm-hmm. in the situation, it's just, you know, it can get really messy.
Right. And he referenced several times that the goal is to be a speaker and a listener at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
That is a school of thought. Another school of thought is that you can't speak and listen at the same time. And that, like, for instance, you know, things like NVC and other things have very technique-driven phases where you're listening and you're only listening and you're speaking and you're only speaking because that's the phase of the process.
Right.
And I think in a broader sense, there's a mindfulness that comes with being.
Right.
Where you learn how to speak and listen in equal parts. But, you know, they often say when your mouth is open, your ears are closed.
Mm, right. I think that thinking about listening and talking in, like, the equal parts, what you just said at the end, is what comes to mind is how the other gets to communicate in the situation. Is it just, like, a directed of, like, you know, the arguments, like, you, which is, you know, anybody that knows fair fighting rules, you don't say you. But anyway, you know, you're just focusing on, like, the one person being right instead of, like, having an equal conversation that in NBC. It's like an observation of something that bothers you. And then the other person actually has an opportunity to respond to that. It's not necessarily just a, like, okay, conversation is done. I got to say what I need to say. Done. Mm-hmm. So when I think of, like, a two-way conversation or the listener and the speaker, it's, you know, this engaging conversation where both parties are coming to the same vista, mm-hmm. not like, you know, one telling the other, like, this is the direction we're going.
Yeah. I had an NBC session earlier today with Jonah Bridgman.
Woo-woo, Jonah. We love you.
We love Jonah. Yeah, he's been on the show before. He discussed how in mediation that he has, you know, done the practice where there's, you know, two parties that have a disagreement, and then he's the mediator. And then in a session, they all alternate, they rotate roles. So all three people get a chance to be the mediator. All three people get to be side A. All three people be side B. And then it's kind of like in debate class where you'd win a debate, and then they go, okay, now argue the other side.
Right.
And it just, you know,
forces you to think from the other perspective of what that person is going through.
Yeah, it tears down those walls because you're not behind that wall that right. you perceived to be in front of you before.
Right.
You know.
That's a good thing. It's something I attempt to do when I'm disagreeing with people mm-hmm. is really come look at it from their perspective. So it usually helps me calm down.
I try. You know, I do believe in doing the best you can. And then at a certain point, you got to cut ties sometimes. Sometimes, you know, you do your best with somebody back and forth. I've had that experience in the past month or so with one person in particular who was a dear friend for years. And I did all I could. And that at a certain point, it was clear that nothing was going to work. And that the more I did, the worse it would be. So you just, you know, on rare occasion, stepping away from a scenario might be the healthier option than trying to, you know,
Fix it or keep working at it. What comes to mind is something that comes up a lot in my spiritual readings, which is non-action is a form of action.
Mm-hmm.
So by not doing something, you know, you are allowing space for whatever is really intended to happen. So, you know, I've definitely had those friendships where it seems like you're just continuously you're coming up to this wall of like, oh, yep, that wall's still there. We, you know, mm-hmm. we're can't see over it, can't get underneath it, don't see any way around it. Okay, I guess I'm just going to go back home now. But at the same time, you know, that relationship is still there. And I know that that person in our friendship, you know, it may grow and blossom at another time, but like continuously revisiting it isn't necessarily what's going to change. Right. But maybe 3 years will pass and then somebody will bulldoze it. Who knows? I mean, that's what happened to you.
Exactly. Bulldoze my walls today. Yeah.
Today. So
you know, sometimes I've also heard said, sometimes you don't forgive somebody because you understand or because you get it now. Sometimes you forgive somebody just because you still want them in your life. And people can argue the healthiness of that kind of behavior, but there are friends of mine that have done bad things. And
I'm sorry, Julian.
And I love them, and I want them in my life. And so the forgiving was around, I don't want to lose you. And I know that what happened was off the board mm-hmm. and something that I don't really allow in friendship. But when it comes to this particular person, it's like, I forgive you because I don't want to lose our friendship.
Right.
And the act is secondary.
There's a good quote by my mama that's coming up, coming to mind.
A mama quote.
But I don't know, it's not like my mama's quote, but she would say it to me, you know, say, shame on, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Like, you know, you should mm-hmm. by the second time you should have realized that it may be coming around the corner, so yeah. You can't necessarily be too surprised by it. But like you're saying about like really trying to like put in that extra effort to make things work, I found that usually like, and this is like I feel like has become like kind of a law in my life in terms of the things that have become more challenging towards the end, things have become more challenging. And then the things that like, even if it's like, oh, I need to make that one last stop before I leave town, the thing that's like I'm really working to do is usually the thing I did not need at all. Mm-hmm. I get to wherever I'm going, they had like 10 of them. Mm-hmm. I get, you know, or like that relationship I was working really hard. Oh, then something really bad. Like, you know, like these things that we're working really hard to like make work out. It's like, mm-hmm. sometimes like that is your sign. Like, how big does the challenge have to get? And it's not necessarily even like a challenge. It's like, do you really need this? In the back of your mind, there's a part of you that goes, no, like, who would you be if you just, like, didn't worry about this thing anymore, didn't worry about this relationship anymore, didn't worry about, you know, being on time to the radio show anymore. No, shugging, that's a bad example. But, you know, who would you be? And he's like, well, my life would be, you know, X. My life would be better. Mm-hmm. It's like, then why are we continuously trying to make things fit that don't fit?
There are so many little pearls of wisdom in that vein that I've picked up over the years, and I have about less than 10 minutes to drop a few of them here.
Okay, this is Julian's last 10 minutes of wisdom right now.
In what you're saying, John Lennon himself, life is what happens to you when you're busy making other plans. And that is, you know, fact. There's a guy who rides motorcycles all over the country, writes a travel blog. And he writes that he never remembers the trips where everything went smoothly. When he looks back, he doesn't remember when he got from North Coast to South Coast and nothing happened. You know, it's when he had a flat tire and he had a hitchhike and somebody picked him up and he went out to dinner with a stranger because of it, or who knows what. It's those, you know, random things that, you know, make life. Now you've written last song on your hand, and you're wondering what our last song is going
to
be.
What do you want it to be?
You know what? Since I just quoted John Lennon, let's end with a John Lennon song. Let's go ahead and end with Imagine.
Okay.
Simply because
that's a good one.
Besides the fact that everybody can pretty much get behind it, Imagine is the most covered song in the entire world.
Wow.
The more people legally pay for the royalties to have their version of Imagine on their album than any other song. And in that same vein, Bob Marley's Legends is the most consistent selling album of all time. Since it's come out, it has consistently sold month for month. I mean, you think of how many copies you've probably bought in your life. That makes sense.
Yep.
And on top of that, U2 is the number one live band in the world. More people buy U2 concerts than anything else. And so when people, I guess is as good a closing statement as any for me on this show, being a musician and whatnot. When people say, you know, the world's going to crap or things like that, or, you know, population and this and that, and everything's going downhill, I like to remind them that the difference between now and 30, 40 years ago is that today the world is singing John Lennon's Imagine. They're buying Bob Marley albums and they're going to U2 concerts. It's a different world. When those songs and that energy and that kind of philanthropic, like U2 does great things all over the world, and that's why people go to so many of their shows all over the world. It is a very different world in this 21st century than it was 30 years ago. And I am insistent that it's getting better. So after 2 years on the show with Tammy, thank you so much for all your hard work.
Aww,
and for including
thanks,
me.
Julian.
You're amazing. Big thanks to KZFR, of course, too, for providing such a community hub. So much happens via KZFR. And
indeed.
If you're like me and, you know, like I was 10 years ago and listening and thinking there's no way you could ever do a show on KZFR and there's no way you could ever get involved, that there must be some kind of huge ladder to climb. It's really a step ladder, and you can get involved by coming down and, you know, being a part.
Come down and meet some people. Come to some KZFR events.
And
get
volunteer.
Involved. Yeah, get to know the people that are involved with KZFR. That's the way to do it. But also just come down to the office. I mean, we're right downtown, 4th and Broadway, 411? No.
416.
Studio 416, yeah. So we're right downtown. come check us out. We are so happy to have people get involved. If you want to be on our show, specifically on Love in the 21st Century, you can contact the office or you can contact us through Facebook. Love to get you on talking about your own personal story of how you view love and how love is alive in your life. In particular, like one thing I know I'm going to miss about you, Julian.
Oh, boy.
Besides just, you know, the humor you bring is the music. The music selection. It was kind of like you were always there. Like I would just be like, this is the topic, Julian. So then we would have a great song. So,
well, then I can think of, genuinely, I can think of no better song to go out on than the one we're going to go out on right now. Thanks again for listening, everybody. You'll be able to catch me periodically in Brad Peterson Studio 416. Or y'all can just hit me up on Facebook. This is John Lennon's Imagine.
While our presidents praise America's magnificent national park system, they're not maintaining them. Bill Clinton, for example, spoke of how lucky he was to have Hot Springs National Park as a childhood playground. Yet he sat idle as that park's natural wonders and facilities deteriorated, and as the Park Service's maintenance backlog soared to $5 billion. Likewise, in his 2000 campaign, a khaki-clad George W. posed in the majestic Cascade Mountain Range. Wailing that parks were, quote, at the breaking point, he vowed to eliminate Clinton's backlog. Instead, he slashed the NPS budget, including a 40% cut for repairs of the very park he had used as a political prop. The maintenance backlog ballooned to nearly $9 billion under his presidency. Ranger George did make one fix, however, a PR fix. Bush operatives instructed park superintendents to make budget cuts, but not to call them cuts. Instead, they were to say that our parks were undergoing, quote, service-level adjustments. Under Obama, who speaks movingly of a childhood Greyhound bus trip with his family to see some of our parks, another 12% has been chopped from the NPS budget, bumping the deferred maintenance bill to a staggering $11.5 billion. To his credit, Obama has proposed a 2016 centennial budget for NPS, mitigating years of destructive underfunding and